Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Scaling back, the new U.S. jobs numbers indicate a cool down in hiring, but that could bring some relief to the hot housing market. Expanding coverage. The Biden administration announces thousands of dreamers may soon have access to affordable health care. Growing problem. There's new information about the alarming number of ransomware attacks worldwide and falling to their knees.
In the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, amen.
Why thousands of men in Ireland are gathering together to say the rosary. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, President Joe Biden says dreamers deserve the promise of health care just like the rest of us. He's referring to immigrants who were brought to the U.S. illegally as children. They'll soon be able to get health care coverage through the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. It is a move that could also have an impact at the ballot box in November. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Tracy, President Joe Biden, trying to win a second term in the Oval Office, said in a statement, "Dreamers are our loved ones, our nurses, teachers, and small business owners," adding he's proud of the contributions of dreamers to our country. And come this November, the president also needs Latino voters to help him win re-election.
President Joe Biden promotes what the administration calls the final rule to expand health coverage for DACA recipients. And come November 1st, 2024, just days before the presidential election, it's estimated roughly 100,000 immigrants will be able to start enrolling in Obamacare under a directive the Biden administration released today. Until now, dreamers were ineligible for government-subsidized health insurance programs. The move took longer than promised to finalize, and it fell short of President Biden's initial proposal to allow DACA recipients to sign up for Medicaid. San Antonio Archbishop Gustavo Garcia Sierra wishes more would be done to help dreamers. He tweets, "It's so painful to see that Congress has not resolved the situation of DACA men and women. It has been a cruel tactic of dysfunctional Congress, so much unnecessary pain, and so much lack of development and transformation in our economy and society."
This is an administration that is committed to fixing the broken immigration system.
A new Gallup poll says immigration is considered the top problem facing the U.S. for the third straight month.
We know that this is an issue when we talk about the immigration system that majority of Americans care about.
The Trump campaign today released a statement on Biden's health care for illegals, saying, "Joe Biden's handouts for illegal immigrants are especially devastating to Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, and union workers who are forced to watch their jobs and public resources stolen by people who illegally entered our country."
President Biden also said in a statement today, "Only Congress can provide dreamers permanent status and a pathway to citizenship." And he adds, "Congress must act." At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Now, for more on this, let's bring in Stephen Camerata, Director of Research for the Center for Immigration Studies, a Washington, D.C.-based research institute that examines the consequences of legal and illegal immigration on the United States. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. So tell us, how significant is this new rule from the Department of Health and Human Services, and who exactly makes up DACA?
Right. So to remind your listeners, DACA individuals are those who were brought to the United States at young ages, and then they're all now adults. But the Obama administration then passed a rule or had a policy that they wouldn't deport them. They were granted what's called deferred action, including work authorization, social security number, and things like that. They don't technically have legal status. They're still considered illegal immigrants or illegal aliens or undocumented. So they are residing here. And we're not going to deport them, but they don't actually have legal status either. Now, that the DACA status could be withdrawn conceivably as well. So that's the group of individuals. Again, they're all adults, even though they came as children generally.
Yeah, and as we heard from Owen Jensen, this new move is expected to help about 100,000 people. Can you talk to us, you know, exactly how it is going to benefit them? And give us an example of how or why they wouldn't be able to get coverage maybe through their work, Medicaid, or even Obamacare previously.
Right. So we think there may be about 600,000 DACA recipients right now. There used to be more, but there's an attrition out of that population. People go home, get married, that sort of thing. And so many of those people already have insurance through their employer or they bought it on their own. And that's it. If you don't have an employer who's offering, because or you're not working. Now, these are mostly working age people. But if you're not working, you can't get it through a spouse, what have you, then you have to get you have to go on one of the exchanges, right, and try to buy insurance, typically, you know, through the Obamacare system. And so part of the Affordable Care Act is that if you don't have a lot of money, then they will subsidize that private health care, sometimes quite a lot. The average subsidy per year that people get per person is about $5,000. So if the insurance would have cost you seven, you get a $5,000 subsidy, say, and then you only have to pay two. Sometimes they're called affordability credits or subsidy credits. But the bottom line is that's what they're now eligible. And we think based on income and the fraction that don't have health insurance, the educated guess is around 100,000 people who will now don't necessarily have health care, but they will at least be able to buy it at a much lower price due to the subsidies, though it's important to note that the money is coming from taxpayers to subsidize their health insurance.
Now, Stephen, so much we can talk about, but we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming on and sorting this all out. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
A fresh jobs data released earlier today shows a cooling of the U.S. labor market. According to the Labor Department, 175,000 jobs were added in April, roughly 60,000 less than were expected. The unemployment rate rose to 3.9%. That is up slightly from March. And wages also rose a modest 0.2%. And here to help us sort out these numbers is Jeffrey Campbell, an economic professor from the University of Notre Dame. Professor, thanks so much for coming on. We appreciate it. So let's talk about these numbers here. They fell short of expectations in April. Does that come as a surprise to you? And what do you think this says about the state of our economy right now?
So it doesn't come as much of a surprise to me at all. It's well within the range of the kind of month-to-month variation we see in these numbers. When we say we're expecting 250 or so, 250K, really that's kind of an average that we're looking for. There's a lot of simply measurement error that goes into these numbers, which the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, acknowledges. The true number could be as low as 40, which would be terrible, or as high as 300K. So the numbers, today's numbers didn't surprise me very much, no. And I don't think it really says very much about the underlying or weakness.
Yeah, and we saw the stock market jumped up quite a bit on this news, up about 450 yes. points. Do you think Wall Street's betting that, you know, the Fed will maybe finally start to drop interest rates soon?
I think they are making that bet. I also think it's a bad bet. The Fed does not drop interest rates based on one number. The Fed has definitely communicated something of an easing bias in its last statement and in the chair's last press conference. But it's not such an easing bias that this relatively benign number would lead to substantial changes in the interest rate scenario.
Yeah, and we're also seeing, some key indicators for everyday people like you and I, gas prices and groceries, still pretty high there. Do you think that we could see maybe prices level off or drop a bit?
Not really, no. There's drops really aren't in the cards, okay? That would be disinflation, which the Fed is committed to fighting against. So if we get lucky, say the war in Ukraine ends earlier than we anticipate, then we could see some fuel price falls, and the Fed would welcome that. But I don't see a fall in the cards for any of this.
Yeah, almost out of time here, about 30 seconds left or so, Professor. But any predictions on what we can see going forward for the rest of the year?
Well, more or less, more of the same. I think that the GDP number came in for last year as pretty much at target, 1.6%. Target is going to be about 1.8. The interest rates, we might get a rate cut or two so that we'd be down in the high fours, 4.75 maybe. And the jobs number should keep coming in at around 250,000 per month, but with some ups and downs.
All right. We shall see how it all shakes out. Professor Campbell, great to be with you. Thanks for your time. God bless.
Thank you. Likewise.
Once considered one of Donald Trump's closest confidants, Hope Hicks, his former White House communications director, took the witness stand today to testify against the former president. Hicks, who said the last time that she spoke with Trump was in 2022, testified that she first learned of payments to adult film actress Stormy Daniels and former Playboy model Karen McDougal from a Wall Street Journal reporter back in 2016. Additionally, Hicks said that Trump told her to deny the alleged affair with Daniels. Today wraps up the second week of the former president's hush money trial. Donald Trump denies any wrongdoing. Well, top U.S. intelligence officials warned members of Congress about a disturbing rise in worldwide cyber attacks. The director of national intelligence, Avril Haines, said U.S. companies and America's infrastructure were the most heavily targeted, and Congress must act now before a major disaster takes place. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales reports. Eric?
Good evening, Tracy. Yes, the news is alarming. From water treatment plants to oil and gas pipelines to electrical grids to even trains and airplanes, all of which, according to the Director of National Intelligence, are being targeted by hackers. According to testimony, ransomware attacks worldwide grew 75% last year, and our adversaries like Russia and China, well, they're teaming up, targeting U.S. infrastructure.
And moreover, this year, cyber actors are attacking U.S. industrial control systems, which are typically used to automate industrial processes at record levels. Many critical infrastructure sectors, including water and wastewater, food and agriculture, defense, energy, and transportation, rely on such systems.
She adds among the most vulnerable is the healthcare industry, with attacks more than doubling last year. A ransom attack in 2022 forced the shutdown of the largest fuel pipeline in the U.S. The closure caused major disruptions to gas delivery and led to long lines at pumps on the East Coast.
So many of those attacks are basically possible as a consequence of just not engaging in good cybersecurity practices, not updating passwords, not, you know, doing the kind of work that needs to be done, patching vulnerabilities that we're aware of.
The head of the Defense Intelligence Agency told lawmakers the U.S. military is also at risk.
This threat directly endangers our defense industrial capabilities, our hard-won technological and military advantages, our allies and partners, and our future defense operations. We must partner, invest, and integrate in new ways to secure what we value and safeguard the assured resiliency of our networks.
Some senators say the U.S. needs to get on the offensive against our adversaries.
They've got to understand that we hold their systems at risk, and that's got to be part of our strategy. It can't just be patching and cyber hygiene.
Other experts tell me sanctions are the answer.
There need to be more sanctions on outbound investment, preventing American money from funding research into Chinese espionage, cyber attacks, and military. There needs to be, I think, stricter controls also of Chinese activities and what we are seeing sort of in terms of cyber attacks, gray zone operations, and influence operations, even also on United States soil.
Now, these warnings come a day after the United Healthcare Group told Congress in a separate hearing that the company was forced to pay some $22 million in ransom to hackers after their records were breached. And you may recall it was last year the cyber attacks temporarily shut down MGM's hotel booking system and disrupted production at the Clorox Bleach Company. Tracy?
Well, Eric, I understand the Justice Department has indicted a member of Congress. What can you tell us about that?
Big news there. Big news. Just a short time ago, the DOJ, that is, actually unsealed a 54-page indictment charging longtime Texas Democrat Henry Cuellar and his wife on 14 counts of bribery, wire fraud, and money laundering. He's accused, among other crimes, of acting as a foreign agent to benefit the government of Azerbaijan. Congressman Cuellar issued a statement saying that he is innocent and he will continue to campaign for the re-election in November. Congressman Cuellar is the only pro-life Democrat in Congress who has been critical of the Biden administration's handling of the crisis at the southern border. Tracy?
Okay, thank you so much, Eric, and we will continue to follow that story. Indeed, we're also learning that a gun went off as officers were clearing pro-Palestinian protesters from the Columbia campus. According to the NYPD, one of its officers accidentally discharged his gun inside an administration building at Columbia University. They said that he was trying to use the flashlight, which was attached to his gun at the time. It fired a single round that struck a frame on the wall. No one was hurt. Well, EWTN News in Depth will take a closer look at the unrest on college campuses across America. Host Monsi Alvarado will speak to Princeton professor and free speech expert Robert George for his reaction to the anti-Semitic protests.
This is not free speech. This is an attack on the fundamental and basic rights and dignity of our Jewish brothers and sisters. And we must not tolerate it. And we Catholics need to be in the forefront of denouncing anti-Semitism in all forms.
And you can watch the rest of the conversation on EWTN News in Depth tonight at 8 p.m. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including Mission to the Moon. China's latest endeavor is the first of its kind in the history of human lunar exploration.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee.
We'll tell you why this is becoming a regular scene in Ireland. Welcome back. A Mississippi bill requiring people to enter restrooms, locker rooms, and dormitories that correspond to their sex at birth is headed to the governor's desk. Passed by the Mississippi House and Senate, the SAFER Act would also require public education institutions to equip facilities with single-sex restrooms, changing areas, and dorms. Opponents of the bill say that it would put transgender people at risk, while supporters say they are standing up for female family members on college campuses. South Carolina lawmakers have approved a ban on so-called gender-affirming care for minors. The bill would ban doctors from performing gender transition surgeries and prescribing puberty blockers and hormone treatments for anyone under the age of 18. School principals would have to notify parents if a child wants to use a name other than the one that's legal. The State House can either accept the bill or it would go to a conference committee before reaching the governor's desk. A torrential rain in the Houston area in Texas forced the cancellation of classes and shut down highways. A flash flood warning was in effect as of this morning as multiple people were rescued amid stranded cars and downed trees. The area along the San Jacinto River is causing much concern as the water rises. Evacuation orders have been placed for those living along portions of the river. What started as a weekly exercise in prayer has spread throughout the world. Each month, thousands gather in Ireland's public squares and cities for the Men's Rosary. It's a weekly gathering aimed at repentance and conversion, but also reparation for how the men of Ireland have not taken proper responsibility for the women in their lives. Although it started in Ireland, the movement has spread to 40 countries, including England, Australia, Spain, and Mexico. And joining us now to discuss this growing movement is one of the founders of the Men's Rosary event, Patrick McChrystal, who also serves as the executive director of Human Life International Ireland. Patrick, great to have you on today. So talk to us about the origins of the event, how it started, and what inspired you.
Well, what happened, Tracy, was my colleague Owen Gallagher and I saw a picture of 300 men from Poland kneeling in a town square, and we were greatly impacted by this. And I said to Owen, I think we could do that. And one thing led to another, and a few months later, in October 2021, we did our first public men's rosary with about 80 men in Derry, Northern Ireland. And that started off a wave of men's rosary groups all over Ireland, 23 on the first Saturday of every month in honour of Our Lady of Fatima. And that has spread to now, we're told, to more than 40 countries of the world.
Patrick, this is so beautiful. Are you surprised at how much it's grown?
Well, what we've done, Tracy, is we've sought to follow Our Lady of Fatima's guidance. We've got on our knees every month, and we're really in a spirit of reparation and prayer for the way that we, men of Ireland, haven't taken proper responsibility for the women in our lives, because if the men of Ireland had taken proper responsibility for the women in our lives and their lives, there wouldn't be an abortion crisis. And it's only men who can do the prayer and the repentance on behalf of men. And we know it's captured the hearts of many people who have walked past us. And when women, when people and women hear that we're on our knees in reparation for the way we men haven't treated women properly in our lives, it really goes a long way to touching people's hearts. And we know a number of people who have returned back to the church and the sacraments and Sunday Mass, having seen one of our rosary rallies on the streets.
Yeah, it's amazing to see. And of course, as we know, May is the month of Mary. How much more is your mission and your efforts amplified during this month?
During the month of May, in fact, there is another organization, actually Tradition, Family and Property. They're quite active here in Ireland, and they are now, they've got something like 530 rosary rallies happening all over Ireland on May 13th this year. And some of those gentlemen joined us at the beginning of our monthly rallies, and I know they were doing this already, but one movement has helped accentuate the other, and we trust and believe that Our Lady is pleased. Our men's rosary website, mensrosaryireland.com, also has a sheet of instructions how any man anywhere over the world can download and read how to set it up in his local town. We've made a lot of mistakes and we've learnt a lot from our mistakes, and the synthesis of what has worked well for us and what has not worked well for us can be found on that downloadable instruction sheet on mensrosaryireland.com.
Well, Patrick, I love this so much. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about this, and thank you for mentioning the website. Very important for people to check out. God bless you.
Thank you for all you're doing, Tracy.
Well, the space race is heating up as China launches a lunar probe to the far side of the moon. The rocket blasted off earlier today. The endeavor is the first of its kind in the history of human lunar exploration. Its mission is to collect and return samples from the moon's mysterious far side. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Synod on Synodality. How a gathering of parish priests in Rome offers hope of active involvement in this fall's upcoming session of the Synod. Following criticism that parish priests were absent from the first session of the Synod, a large number of priests gathered near Rome this week to discuss how to implement synodality at the local level. EWTN Vatican Bureau Chief Andreas Tannhauser has more.
We shared our stories. We shared our experiences. Different experiences, different stories. And with that sharing the stories, we learn lessons. Lesson means church is still alive. Church is not dead. Even though world is in crisis, even though some part of the church is in crisis, but church is alive.
Good morning.
5 months before the opening of the Synod 2024, 200 parish priests from around the world gathered this week in Sacrofano outside of Rome for a five-day international meeting dedicated to the question of how to be a local synodal church on mission. The meeting came in response to the desire expressed by the Synod Fathers in October last year to develop ways for a more active involvement of deacons, priests, and bishops in the synodal process. The United States was represented by five priests, including Father Clinton Ressler from the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston.
The feeling of being getting to know other priests and their realities and seeing how much we have in common with all the diverse kinds of situations there are, and yet probably that experience of being a priest on the front lines in the trenches is kind of a universal experience. The joy, you know, the sorrow, the hope, but it's that experience of being together with other pastors.
Organized by the General Secretariat of the Synod and the Dicastery for the Clergy, the meeting featured 5 days of discussions, prayer, and discernment. Speaking to EWTN News, Father Luis Martin de San Martin, Undersecretary of the General Secretariat of the Synod of Bishops, emphasized the importance of parish priests in this synodal journey.
Synodality, like any reform process, starts from the bottom. It is an authentic process that seeks a coherent church united to Christ, experiencing Christ. This is an experience of communion, and it brings Christ into the midst of the world through evangelization.
At the end of the meeting, the participants met with Pope Francis, who sent a letter to all the parish priests attending the international gathering, inviting them to be missionaries of synodality among themselves, but also with their fellow parish priests back home.
What was very comforting is that he listened to many questions of parish priests in the assembly, and he answered to them like a parish priest. So with the wisdom and the love for the people, as a parish priest, and so that feeling of to recognize each other in this mission of or this standing in a church was already comforting.
The outcomes of the meeting will contribute to the draft of the Instrumentum Laboris, the working document for the second session of the Synodal Assembly, which will take place in Rome in October 2024. In Rome, Andreas Tonhauser, EWTN News Nightly.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.